It's time now for the Phenology Report.
The Phenology Show is about the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we are about to talk about some interesting observations. So last Saturday morning, my wife and I got up and embarked on a trip to Lake Superior. We are near Lutzen, Minnesota, and we traveled across from Grand Rapids through Hibbing and then Mackinac and out through just north of Two Harbors, came out at just a little bit east of Finland on the Baptism River, and had a great experience. But the one thing that caught my eye through all of that was how the aspens changed, the trembling aspen, the poplar. So back home on Saturday, as I was leaving, I noticed that a few of the popples in my yard had just begun to show a touch of yellow. This is, I realized, 4 days ago, and I haven't looked at them since, but they were just starting to turn pretty green. And as I drove across, by the time I got east of Hibbing over towards Cherry, they were pretty colorful. They were still, it was a mixture of green and yellow, but definitely yellow was coming on. Not that bright yellow that they will achieve as they move closer toward dropping their leaves. But still, you could see that there was a definite yellowing of the aspens. And then as we came around and got closer to the North Shore, yellow on the west side of the old Sawtooth Mountains. And on the east side, where I am now, they look pretty green. There is a climate that is created by Lake Superior that has an effect on the phenology in this area. And we have we've engaged with the Grand Marais Great Expectations Community School, and we are going to be getting more information from them about the timing and phenology that exists over here. But it is different. It's not the same. And from the top of the hill, we were at Lutzen. My grandson and my daughter and her husband took the gondola ride at Lutzen and talked about all of the wonderful colors. But the aspen up high like that and away from the lake are definitely showing some signs of color change. But right here along the edge of the lake, you would think it was mid-August. They're just green as can be over here. So the other trees, the birches are dropping leaves. But, you know, birches, even back home, the birches are dropping leaves. The birches and the silver maples in my yard work the same sort of a deal. You look at them, they look green. But if you look at the ground beneath them, you'll see a lot of yellow leaves. So a leaf turns yellow and falls off. And another leaf somewhere else on the tree turns yellow and falls off. When you look at the whole tree, it still looks pretty green, but there are fewer and fewer leaves on the tree, and more of them will be turning yellow. And at some point, the remaining leaves will all turn yellow, and then we'll be moving into definitely into fall. Looking at the weather report for the next 10 days or so, I don't see any signs of frost. I don't see any temperatures dropping into the 30s at all over the next 10 days. So we are again going to push our first frost of the fall date back quite a ways. And it is interesting to note that when I began this program 40 years ago or more, the average first frost for our area, for the Grand Rapids area, was the 16th of September. And if I take the last 10 years and look for the average first date of frost, it's moving into October. So it has gotten 2 weeks later over 40 years. And I suspect that that will not be it changing anytime soon. There's always a chance that we'll get a frost. I know that Hibbing and Embarrass and Tower and some of those places, they get frost just about, you know, on average, I think it was mid-August again, or mid-September, when they had their first frost in Hibbing. And that will be probably continue to be the case, but surrounding areas, and I'm not sure about Bemidji or Brainerd, but certainly in the Grand Rapids area and where I live south of Grand Rapids, the frost has gotten much, much later. The first frost has gotten significantly later over the last 10 or 15 years. It's almost as if there's been a shift where fall has come in a little bit later and spring has come in a little bit later. But I always remain hopeful come the end of March that spring will be just around the corner in April. Not always the case, but we always have hopes for that. At least at this point, when you're just going into it, you sort of look out the other end and say, well, let it be a kind of a nice short but intense winter. I like winter. I do like the activities of winter, but by the end of March, I'm sort of done with it. We'll talk more about that by the end of March, I'm certain. Around here, I mentioned the aspens. The sugar maples are really colorful. The dogwoods in this area are quite colorful, red for the most part, sort of pinkish. Some of the red osier dogwoods get very pink. The speckled alder, the tag alder, is a bit greener here, at least in Grand Marais. It's a bit greener than back home. It's green always. Speckled alder leaves don't change color. They just fall off the tree, and they change color on the ground. They'll get a nice brown color when they hit the ground, but they seldom are brown on the tree. They mostly just fall off as green leaves, and they have been doing that. The alders back home are at about 50% of the leaf cover that they had back in summertime. And that will continue for a bit longer. And then, of course, the alders will be bare, at which point you will be able to see those little brown. And I know it's just habit, but everybody looks at them and goes, oh, little pine cones. Well, they look like little cones of a pine, but since it's a deciduous plant, it's certainly not a pine. So there are these little pine cone-like structures. These are the flowers, the female structures that are hanging on the alders. And they're quite obvious. Once the leaves are down, you will be able to see them quite obviously. They're a mixture of green and brown right now, and oftentimes they don't drop their leaves until late in the winter. I can guarantee you that you will find alder leaves on the ground on top of the snow in January. It just, that's what seems to happen. Besides that, let's see, I looked a bit at flowers blooming back home. I had Horeolicium, red clover. I had some New England asters that are really in peak of bloom right now. The northern heart-leaved aster, last flowers, that's just the very fewest of those remain. The same thing is true here. Northern heart-leaved aster and large-leaved aster are sort of at the end of their flowering stage, and I found that to be quite consonant with back home. So large-leaved asters and northern heart-leaved asters are at the end of their season. If you have New England asters, chances are, at least this far north, that you have planted them, because they don't seem to reproduce, or they don't seem to grow here naturally. If you go further south, you'll run into New England asters as a matter of course, just here and there across the countryside. And they are late blooming flowers. It's always seems like there's a frost before these guys flower. Now, this year we haven't had frost yet, but the New England asters are definitely just coming on to their really peak bloom. Looking at some of the insects out there, I have been seeing lots of meadowhawks. There's lots of meadowhawks up here. There are lots of meadowhawks back home. These are the smaller dragonflies that are about, maybe an inch to an inch and a half long. And they are, the males are red and the females are gold colored. Here on Lake Superior, I caught one yesterday with the kids. and it was quite dark, and I don't have my dragonfly book with me, but I recognized it as a meadowhawk. I just didn't recognize it to species. So thereabout, seen some darners back home and some darners up here. That will go on for a bit longer. I saw lots of monarch butterflies in the area, in the Grand Rapids area last week. I haven't seen a monarch up here, but the kids at Grand Marais told me that there were monarchs around. I have been seeing lots of morning cloak butterflies, both here and at home. And the morning cloak is that one that's the size of a monarch, but it is very dark. When you see it, your first impression is going to be, look at that big black butterfly. And it does look black. If you catch one, you'll see that they are dark, dark, dark brown with a kind of a cream-colored border on the wing. And then the hind wings have a series of blue spots that are quite lovely. But suffice it to say, the morning cloak is going to be that big black butterfly that you're going to see. The other butterfly I've been seeing quite a bit of lately is the clouded sulfur, the common sulfur. It's a little yellow butterfly, about maybe an inch and a quarter. It's smaller than the monarchs, but it is it's the yellow butterfly that you're likely to see flitting around out there right now. Other than that, let's see. Ants. My friend Kyle Pearson sent me a picture from his driveway of the Lasius genus ants. These are the little red ones that make the little volcanic-like cones in your yard or around your driveway, maybe on your sidewalk, maybe in between the cracks somewhere. Anyway, this last week, we're at that stage of the elites maneuvering out of the anthill. These little Lasius ants are usually called Labor Day ants because that's about the time that this happens, that the winged males and females come out. And Kyle got a great picture that I will try to post online here in the next day or two of both the female elite and the male elite, and the female is much larger, so it's pretty easy to tell the difference. But all of these ants are much bigger than the little red ants that you see running around all summer. So these guys were late in breaking out, but what a spectacular sight. And for Kyle to actually be there and get a picture of both the males and the females before they took wing was really amazing. And I will get that picture up on our website before too long so that you can have a look at them and see for yourself what this amazing sight is. Now, those ants will fly off. The females and the males will fly off, and at some point they will mate, probably not the ones from the same colony. They'll be looking to have a more of a mix of genetic material. So they will mate, and immediately after mating, the females will use their legs to break their wings off and then use the muscles that they develop to fly as a means of making themselves ready for digging the chamber that will become their anthill. They will be the queen of that anthill, and they have to do most of that work themselves until they can get down below and start laying those fertilized eggs and create their own colony. They put out a lot of these females and males, and about 1 in 500 of the females will actually be successful at creating a new colony of ants. So it's pretty much a roll of the dice whether or not they're going to make it or not. And I guess you just have to hope for them, because who doesn't like a few ants crawling around? What's a picnic without some ants, right? My final notes for the day, a little bit of a comment about the comet. There is a comet that is right now circling the sun, and it has been coming into the sun. And so you have been able to see it early in the morning, just before sunrise. I saw it yesterday about 6:45 in the morning. It's going to circle around the sun and go shooting back out of the solar system right about now. And so starting this week, if you want to get out and look for the comet, you should probably switch to doing it in the evening. And it will be best seen in an area where you have an uninterrupted vision to the west right after sunset. And if you hold your arm out at, if you hold your hand out at arm's length, make a fist about, it'll be about half a fist above the horizon where you will see it in the next couple of days. And each day it will get a little bit higher until finally it'll be far enough away from the sun that the light will not really be spectacular anymore. It will fade. It's right now not quite as bright as Venus, but certainly bright enough to see. When I saw it yesterday, I was looking through binoculars, and it was fairly easy to see. It reminded me at first, at the first time I saw it, I thought, oh, there's a jet with a contrail way, way, way far away, and it is in the sunlight. But a cloud sort of came along and obscured it. And then as that cloud sort of slipped along, I went back to the same spot, and there it was again, in the same spot. And that's when I realized I was looking at the comet and not an airplane, because if it had been an airplane, it would have moved significantly from where it was, which it did not, because it was much further away. And so getting a look at it was pretty thrilling, and it was pretty bright through my binoculars. I could not see it with my naked eye, but I hope that the case will be that after it passes the sun and comes up in the evening, that it will be a little bit brighter and a little bit easier to see. But as I said, you're going to have to find a spot where you are looking, where you can see the horizon very clearly to the west, and it'll be right around where the sun sets. Just follow it down and look a little bit above the horizon, and hopefully you'll get a look at the comet that is now circling our sun and getting ready to head back out of the solar system. That's our phenology show for today. Thanks for tuning in. As always, if you have observations to report, we are anxious to hear from you.
You can find lots more phenology at our website, kaxc.org, or join that Season Watch Facebook page. And we also have a newsletter that comes out once a week with a lot of great information. Check it all out at kaxc.org at 7:42. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer.